Today on the show, we are doing listener Q&A. I've got a stack of your questions that were sent through the This Is Money Facebook community. We'll be talking about setting career goals, landing a promotion in a flat structure, how do you get out of the comfort zone if you're stuck, and how to talk to your employer about burnout. Also, I just want to ask a favor. If you've been listening to this pod for a while and you've got one good thing out of it, I would love if you can do me a favor if you can give us a 5-star rating on Spotify or Apple. That really gets the word out there about the podcast. And thanks so much for listening, because I appreciate seeing all of our listener stories. And when people message me on LinkedIn with their career wins and work wins, it just means so much to me. Thanks for being part of this community. Let's get into it. This is a podcast about making work work. You'll learn about leadership, career growth, and how to navigate those weird work challenges. I run a HR consulting business called Boldside, where I help leaders build epic team cultures. If you lead a team or run a business and you think I can help, let's connect on LinkedIn. My name is Shelley Johnson, and this is Work.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
All right, Michael, long-time listener of the show, love your work. You have asked a really good question. How can you succeed in a promotion where your subject matter knowledge is limited? This is a really good question, because I think for a lot of us, when we're looking at promotional opportunities and we think, that role is something that really interests me, but I'm lacking some of the technical knowledge that I think I need. There's a couple of things. Firstly, I just generally believe that going for a role that interests you is worth doing. Like, if you look at a role and you're like, I can tick 60% of that, there's 40% where I'm like, I don't know, maybe, maybe not. I think go for it. There is no harm in going for a role where you can tick 60%. Like, what's the worst that can happen? Well, you can get rejected. And what do you learn from that? Well, you learn about how you want to structure your resume. You learn about how you kind of show up in an interview process. So to me, that's all good things. But I've got a couple of tips that I think will be helpful. So there's a few things you need to do. If your subject matter knowledge or your kind of technical skill is limited, but you still want to apply for the job, you need to be able to show skills that are transferable. And I think there are a lot more transferable skills than we realize. So I'd be really trying to demonstrate how you have a growth mindset and how you can solve problems. Because one of the problems that comes up if you have a limited subject matter knowledge is that you're not going to know all the ins and outs. So you need to show how can you quickly solve problems that arise, and how are you a learner? Because if you're a learner, you're going to be able to navigate and learn the subject matter knowledge if you've got the behavioral qualities. Now, obviously, there's some exceptions to this. Like, for example, if you want to be a doctor but you haven't gone to medical school, well, that is going to be a fundamental problem. But let's say an example actually that comes to mind for me is someone who was working in a contact center in a customer service role and ended up landing a promotion into a copywriting role. So big career change, really. They'd gone from customer service to a communications specialist role. And I think that is an example of where someone can demonstrate, okay, I don't have maybe the full subject matter knowledge, but I can show skills where I've communicated under pressure with customers in a way that aligns with our brand tone of voice, and therefore can learn this job and can learn this skill of copywriting, and let me show you all the creative writing I've been doing on the side that might help set me up for this particular job. So that person was able to show they're a learner, they've got a growth mindset, and they've got transferable skills which set them up to navigate the lack of subject matter knowledge. So when you're thinking about a promotion or maybe a career change, you need to look at what are the transferable skills and how can I show and demonstrate my ability to learn and problem solve? The other thing I want to remind you of is Cal Newport's book, so good they can't ignore you. This book was really helpful for me when I was writing Sort Your Career Out and Make More Money, because he talks about this idea of how you develop rare skills that aren't easily imitated. Like if you can create a rare mix of skills that makes you different and makes you stand out from other candidates, that is a huge advantage for you. For example, an employment lawyer that I know recently transitioned into a people and culture role. And there's overlap of skills there because people and culture specialists need to have an understanding of employment law, but they're very distinct positions. And so she was able to bring her employment law skill set, but she also wanted to learn more of that leadership development culture, kind of the, I think, the fun part of people and culture and HR. And so bringing those rare skills together makes her stand out. So I want you to try and find, when you're thinking about going for a role that you might tick 60% of the criteria, and then there's this kind of little gap where you think there's a knowledge gap here, use the gap to your advantage. Like find ways to go, well, yeah, I have a gap there, but I also bring in these rare skills that make me stand out from all the other candidates and give me an edge. So make the thing that you're worried about, try to reframe it to use it to your advantage. And I'll just reinforce that thing one more time about growth mindset. At the end of the day, what managers want is they want employees who have a growth mindset. They want employees who can learn, who can take ownership of the role, who can take accountability and who can make stuff happen and problem solve and bring solutions. That's what they want. So show that in every part of the application process. Talk about your growth mindset. Talk about how you've learned on the job before, because that's essentially what we're all going to be doing throughout our whole career. We're always going to be learning new things. We're always going to need to be upskilling. And so, Michael, I think that's where you anchor when you're looking at this promotion. Focus on how you've developed, grown, problem solved, how you've been a team player, how you've added value, and how you've learned in the past so that you can bridge that gap in knowledge that you have right now. All right, Alicia, how do you find opportunities for advancement or promotions within a department that has a flat structure? I think this comes down to how we look at our careers. And on a previous episode with Tim Duggan, we talked about this idea of the corporate ladder. And there's this pressure that we feel to climb the corporate ladder because I don't know why. Maybe it's external pressure. Maybe it's we feel like, well, that's what we need to do. But I guess my first question would be, is that pressure that you're feeling to get a promotion an internal thing where you're like, I really want to progress and let's say move into leadership? Or is it an external pressure? And is that something that you really feel like you want and need to pursue for other reasons that aren't internal? So that's like first question. Whenever I hear people talk about their career growth, they're often thinking about a title. Like I just want to go from marketing specialist to marketing manager and then from marketing manager to chief marketing officer. And it's often about a title. And I guess my challenge to you listening would be, how do you move away from thinking about your career progression as like role titles and thinking more about what skills do I want to build? Because when I think about the future, it's probably going to be more fluid and it's all going to be about accumulating skills and having a skills mix, like I said before, that's rare and difficult for other people to imitate. It's that thing that sets you apart. So Alicia, my question would be, how can you focus on skills? Growth doesn't have to be about climbing the career ladder. I want you to sit down with your boss and say, okay, there's a flat structure here, but I really want to grow and progress. That's one of my personal values is growth. So how might I grow here and what skills do you think I need to build? And so start to have that conversation and dialogue and come prepared with your thoughts. Don't just like put it onto your manager to come up with their skills. You might go, I think I need to build skills in communication. I would like to build my skills in influencing people, whatever that is. I want you to kind of think about what are the skills you would like to build, but also get their input on it. And then I want you to talk about, okay, well, these are the skills I want to build. Is there any options here for me to get support, either like a coach or a mentor within the business? Or are there some kind of training opportunities that you can pursue to build those skills. Because if you're in a flat structure and there isn't the promotional opportunities that you're looking for, start thinking about, well, my career growth is around skill building. And I think that is really important. And the funny thing is, the more proactive you get in that, the better you're going to be set up for when an opportunity does come up. And opportunities come up in like surprising ways. So sometimes we think, well, we're in this flat structure and there's going to be no movement in that kind of next level up because they've all been here for a long time. And then the next day you come in and you find out this person's left, which has created a whole gap over in this department, which means there's all these movements happening, and bam, there's your opportunity. And if you've prepared by building the skills that are valuable, that are adding value to the business, but also important to you, you are going to, again, stand out. And so I want you to have these conversations. I think we often wait for the opportunity to come up, or we feel like our manager will kind of guide that process. And our managers have about 50 million things that they're thinking about, and they're often not thinking about your career because they're trying to solve a fire over here and a problem over here and all these other things. So I want you to be going, how can I own this conversation and how can I make this a win-win? So it's a win for you because you're building skills, but it's a win for the business to invest in your skill development because it's going to add value to them. And we have to have these conversations and talk to our managers, because I reckon these conversations are so important, like, and they just don't happen enough. So in your one-on-one, be intentional. Prepare for the conversation, Alicia, by going, hey, boss, I would love to talk to you about some areas I've been thinking for my own career growth. When do you have time to catch up? I'm thinking about this particular skill that's needed in the business and this skill, and I'd love to develop in those areas. Can we chat about this? Or can we go get a coffee and talk it through? So make that a priority, create space, and instead of maybe focusing on the title that you're after, focus on the skills that you want to build. And as you build those skills, the titles come as a result of that. All right, we have another Alicia, a different Alicia in the Facebook community who's asked this question. What ideas do you have for managers to set a new team up for success? Are there activities, exercises, and planning to build a positive culture and high performance? Oh, Alicia, I love this question. And I think I just want to say to you, you actually considering this question in the early stages of that team building, that's just a huge tick to me, because often we don't think about it until 3 months down the track and we've missed that moment. And whenever teams are in this newly forming stage, it's a great opportunity to pause. And before you think about the work, I want you to think about how you work. I'm going to just say that again. Before you think about the work, all the things that you have to do, I want to think about the way you work. There's a couple of things that I do in our workshops with leaders. So we run workshops all around Australia with leadership teams, and we do this activity that's really practical and easy. You could run this in any team meeting, book an hour. This is how you do it. So I want you to focus on what are the core behaviors that you want your team to model. Because most issues on teams are behavioral, not technical. So I want you to do this. Get the team together and get some, you know, in person is awesome, but you can do it online. You have three questions that you're going to ask. What are the behaviors that we must have? What are the behaviors that we can't have? And what are the behaviors that are nice to have? And I want you to define them as a collective. So you workshop this, you go, okay, what are our must-have behaviors? What are our can't-have behaviors? Get really specific. Like, people are often like, our must-have behavior is communication. I'm like, no, sorry. That is not specific. And I have no, like, communication is just so broad. Get specific. What do you mean by communication? So it might be that it's timely communication, that we're responsive to one another, that we give positive feedback in this team and we give constructive feedback. Like, what are you talking about when you say communication? So get specific, challenge your team to do that. The next thing is the can't haves. And this is probably your most important, because sometimes I find thinking about what behaviors are we not going to tolerate on this team. It's not just like the really obvious ones, because like people will be like, well, we're not going to tolerate disrespect. I'm like, yes, 100%, you're not going to tolerate that. But what about the subtle things? So some of the subtle behaviors that I think get tolerated on teams would be like meetings after the meeting. So you know when you have like a problem in a meeting and everyone knows it, but no one talks about it. And so then they have like a little separate secret meeting after the meeting. Those things are kind of the subtle behaviors you don't want to tolerate. So you're like, we don't want to have this culture where we're talking about people when they're not around. We're talking about issues, but not talking in the right channels. So I want you to get specific. What are the can't have behaviors? I think of a few. Ego, like big egos, so unhelpful for teams. Other things would be not asking for help when you need it. Like I would be saying that's a can't have. Like we on our team, we want people to be able to ask for help. So in the must-haves, you would have the ability to be vulnerable and open, the ability to be brave when you need support. The other thing you might have in the can't-haves is cutting people off in meetings or interrupting, or you might have a team kind of standard that you want to set and you want to say, in meetings, we're not on Slack. Whatever it is, I want you to get specific. And then the nice-to-haves, and this is where people kind of get a little bit like, oh, what do we do with the nice-to-haves versus the must-haves? So I would say the nice-to-haves are, if we think about this as a hierarchy, so at the bottom layer, we have the must-haves. So that's like foundational. If you're going to be on this team, you have to be able to be honest. You have to be able to be kind in how you speak and communicate. The must-haves are foundational and the nice-to-haves sit above that. So let's say one of the must-haves is kindness. On our team, you have to be kind. And then the nice-to-haves might be confidence. So we want people to be confident and show up in a way that's kind of confident and self-assured or whatever. That's a nice to have. Here's the thing. Let's say you have people on your team that are confident, but they're not kind. Well, you could have all the confidence in the world, but if you're a bit of a jerk, well, that's not going to work here on our team because you haven't met the must-haves first. Great, you're confident, but you're not kind. So that's not going to work here. So do you see what I mean? It's a hierarchy, like must-haves, you have to have this if you work here. Nice-to-haves are up here. You could have all the nice-to-haves in the world, not have the must-haves and still not work on our team. So Alicia, I want you to define this. Work with your team, take time out. You can workshop it, message me on LinkedIn if you want to know how we run this. Must-haves, can't-haves, nice-to-haves, run that with your team, define it as a group, see what people come up with. And try and get as specific as possible. And then when you stand back and you look at it and you're like, okay, everyone, are we all committing to this? Are we all in agreement that these are the behaviors that we want to have on our teams and the things that we're going to live out? And when you define it collaboratively as a new team, it's just absolutely so powerful. And the only other thing I would look at is really focus on what behaviors would hold us back from being high performing. And so you could ask a couple of questions, like some really nice coaching questions would be, what do we look like when we're at our best? And what behaviors do we look like when we're performing to an average standard? So don't even worry about what does it look like when we've got underperformance. Like don't even focus on that. You're really just comparing what does high performance look like versus average performance. Because the gap between those things is, in my opinion, like a lot bigger than we think. So just focus on what are the mediocre kind of, because no one wants to be part of a mediocre team. So what are the kind of behaviors we see on a mediocre or average team versus what do we see on a high performing team? Use some of those coaching questions to get this info out of your people. And then together you can define what do we want to be known for as a team? And this is just so beautiful. I'm so glad you're thinking about this at the beginning of forming a new team. It's so important wherever you're at. And if you need help, DM me. This is what I love, seeing businesses and leaders do this day in, day out. It's absolute best. Thank you, Alicia. We're going to go to a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to be answering a question around how do you tell your boss that you're experiencing burnout? And what do you do if you're stuck in the comfort zone? If you want to grow in your career, I just wanted to remind you about our book, Sort Your Career Out and Make More Money. Glenn James and I have written this book to help you with any kind of career crisis, but also those things that you want, like getting a promotion, making more money, moving into a leadership role, or if it's time to quit your job. You can find our book wherever you get good books from, or you can listen on the audiobook, Sort Your Career Out and Make More Money. Now let's get back to the show.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
All right, Colm has asked this question. How do you discuss with your employer that you're at risk of burnout? What do I do about it? Firstly, I just want to say this is a really tough spot to be in, and I want you to go back and listen to a few of the episodes on burnout because they're going to be really helpful. So please make sure you go and listen to those episodes. There was one recently with Emily Douglas. It's really helpful. She's an organizational psychologist. Check that out because it's going to be super helpful for where you're at. But let's just talk about how do you communicate it. I think the first thing is you need to be brave. Like, you're going to have to be brave. And talking about burnout is a really confronting thing, because when you're in the middle of that and your energy is really low and you're, you know, emotionally drained, it can be hard to kind of rally that energy to even have that conversation. But if you don't, it doesn't get better. So it's really important that we have these kind of conversations. And if your manager is a good manager, they want to know where you're at. So this is a really important conversation, and this is something that they would want to know. Number one, be brave. I would open it, and for any difficult conversation, I encourage people, before they think about delivering the message, so the message is I'm at risk of burnout or I'm really struggling, that's the message. Before you get to the message, there's this thing called framing. I don't know, it's like some genius person came up with it, so not my idea. But off the top of my head, I can't kind of credit it to whoever it belongs to. But framing is a tool you can use to communicate difficult messages. And essentially, think about a picture. So like, I'm looking at a picture right now of a dog in the hotel with a sword in its mouth. It's really random and obscure. So it's like this weird painting, and then around it is a frame. The picture of the dog is the message. The frame is what is holding it up. And so the way you frame conversations, think about that. This is holding this message up. This is positioning the message. Here's how we do it. The framing is, hey, I need to talk to you about where I'm at, and this is a hard conversation, and I feel a bit vulnerable. So that is your framing. You are positioning that conversation, and that says to your manager, they need to listen and be present. Now, I know we shouldn't have to kind of signal that people should listen and be present, but I don't know about you. I've sat in a fair few one-on-ones where people haven't been present. So framing helps. That's your step one. Acknowledge if you're feeling vulnerable, feeling nervous, simply by stating that and owning the emotion, you're disarming some of its power over you as well. And that's a really helpful tool. That's from Susan David in her book, Emotional Agility. She talks about how it defangs the emotion if you label it. So be brave, frame the conversation up. And then you need to tell your story. So sometimes I think what stops us is we feel like people might not validate where we're at. And so we withhold, or we don't go into kind of like the fullness of what we're experiencing. I want you to be able to tell your story. So describe what's happening. Tell them, okay, this is what's happened. This is what's happened in the lead up. This is what I've been experiencing. This is what I've been feeling. When I'm driving to work, I start feeling X, Y, Z. Whatever that is, I want you to be able to tell the story of where you're at. And then there's two other things, and these are things that I think most people struggle with. You need to ask for help, to say, what support is there? I'm struggling to find a solution because of where I'm at. Can we talk about options? Is there an employee assistance program that the business offers? Can you engage that? Is there, you know, some time off that you need to take, whatever that is, start asking for help that you need and the support that you need. So I hope that's helpful. And I just want to remind you again, go and listen to those previous episodes because there's a lot of good content in there around how to have this conversation. And I think that good managers, they want to know this stuff. They want to know where you're at. And sometimes we think we're invincible and we'll get through it. I think one of the biggest challenges when people are going through burnout is they just want to push through. And I kind of describe it as rallying. Like it's like rally the energy. It's like find that energy. And sometimes, especially when you're at like point of feeling burnt out, there is no energy to be rallied. Like, and so we need space. We need rest. We need time to kind of refresh, relax, and focus on our well-being. And so, yeah, I think this is really important, Colm. And I'm glad you asked the question. And I know it's a really tough spot to be in. Okay, last question is from Michelle. I'm finding myself stuck in a comfort zone and I don't know how to move forward from that. I'm okay with it for now as I juggle family commitments, but I have days where I think, oh, I've really stuck myself into a pigeonhole. While in the comfort zone, I've lost confidence and networking skills. I think the comfort zone is funny, isn't it? It's a trap that we all fall into and it's good for a while. Like this is the thing. This is why it's so like alluring. It's good for a while. But then I think what you said, Michelle, at the back end around, but I've now lost confidence and networking skills. Ultimately, over the time, getting stuck in the comfort zone is a trap because we lose confidence. You're so right. Like we lose confidence. And so I want to talk about a couple of things. Firstly, you're saying, I'm okay with it now because I juggle family commitments. So I think you've worked out, well, my priority right now is I've got this stuff going on with my family. I'm juggling. I don't know if you're, you know, a parent or if you've got kind of caring responsibilities, whatever that looks like, those are your priorities. And so right now you're thinking, well, I'm not going to go all in on some really, really challenging role or a career move because where I'm at priority-wise, this works for me. But I don't want to feel this sense of lowered confidence. So I think the issue we want to address is how do we rebuild that confidence? And the way that we do it is we start small. So again, I know I've talked heaps about skills. I want you to focus on one area where you want to get out of your comfort zone. So I think it's very easy to fall into the all or nothing mindset of like, I'm in my comfort zone, I feel stuck. So now I need to get completely out of my comfort zone. I need to quit my job, start my own business, start a side hustle and, you know, slowly, you know, fall over with all the overwhelm. I don't know, like we feel like it's all or nothing. We're either in our comfort zone or we're completely out of our comfort zone and, you know, melting. What I want you to do is start small. So focus on one area that you want to get out of your comfort zone. And what I would, based on what you've said, I'd focus on the networking skills. So I'd go, okay, what is one area? Networking. All right, networking. And if you've heard me before, I personally, networking is such a struggle, I've got to say. And it would be an area where I'm like out of my comfort zone. But that's your area, Michelle. This is what I'm saying to you. Your area, let's go. Let's focus on networking, that area. And so how do you do it? It's really easy because networking, like it's very practical of how you do it. You sign up to a networking event. And honestly, right now, as I'm thinking about it, I'm like, oh, that's just totally out of my comfort zone. I don't enjoy stuff like that. But by doing the networking event that you maybe feel like overwhelmed just thinking about, that is building that growth zone muscle. So what's the opposite to the comfort zone? It's the growth zone. So I want you to get into that space where you feel like you're growing, but only like one area, not all the areas, you know? So like, just focus on networking and then you're kind of committing to something over an extended period of time. So this is what I want you to do. I'm going to build my skill in networking, insert whatever area you're wanting to focus on if you feel the same way, and then commit to a regular pattern of exposing yourself to that thing that makes you feel in the growth zone. So you go to a monthly networking event and you're going to commit to that for 6 months. If you remember, we on a previous episode at some point talked to Kate from the Australian Finance Podcast, and she told me that she started doing improv classes. And I think that is a perfect example of getting out of your comfort zone. And she would do it, I don't know if it was like once a fortnight or something, but fortnightly, and committed to do it for over like an extended period of time. But that ability to get out of your comfort zone meet new people and have like a regular occurrence of it. So it's like you're getting this like dose of discomfort every fortnight. Where you're like, oh my gosh, this is hectic, but it's only for an hour. So for you, Michelle, like get out into a networking event and start to build the muscle of getting out of your comfort zone, but it's not in every area, it's just one area. And I think this is helpful for anyone listening, that I personally believe that you do your best work when you are in that growth zone. Now, it doesn't have to be all or nothing, but it could just be that you've got this one area that you're focusing on, one skill you're trying to build. And in order to build the skill, you have to get out of your comfort zone. I've said comfort zone like 80 times, I'm sorry. You build confidence by doing things that are challenging, and then you realize, hey, I can do challenging things. So if you're listening and you're like, I want to build my confidence, I want to get out of my comfort zone and into the growth zone, then start small and focus on one area. And then I want you to commit to exposing yourself to that challenging thing, be it public speaking, be it networking, be it small talk. It could be whatever. Do that. Oh, and small talk. Let's not get started on that. Do that for an extended period of time. Have a regular kind of rhythm to it. And then, Michelle, I can promise you, you are going to feel like you're growing, you're developing, and as you build that muscle, it becomes easier to do it in other areas later on. All right, that's all we've got time for. We've got some awesome guests coming up on the pod. I cannot wait for you to hear all the people. As I mentioned up front, if you enjoyed the episode, give us a 5-star rating on Spotify or Apple, leave us a review, and let's connect on LinkedIn. Talk soon.
We acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands on which we live and work, and pay respects to their elders past, present, and emerging. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to this podcast.
Before you do anything meaningful with your money, you need to be able to control your money. I can help. The Glen James Spending Plan is a complete spending plan budgeting system that will show you how to manage your money. It includes a downloadable spreadsheet that will tell you how much to put into what account each week, and you will get control over your money within 2 pay cycles. Thousands of people have used the Glen James Spending Plan, and it is now free. So download the Glen James Spending Plan and enroll today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.